Week 4, a glorious future. We have a winner. Whether you're playing bingo or any sort of game, when the criteria are met to claim a victory, someone may shout, "We have a winner." There is no doubt that what was needed had been supplied and that victory had been won. We talked earlier about how things going well isn't necessarily a sign of God's blessing on an initiative, and things being opposed aren't necessarily the adversary trying to discourage God's good work. So is there something that we can point to that suggests the work for His kingdom is on the right track and that God is with us in the work? Is there something that could make us shout, "We have a winner"? I talked to a discipleship pastor at the church I attend about this very thing. I asked him, "What lets you know that you're on to something that God is doing in your church or community?" He agreed that it's not how well or how badly it's going that is the key. He said that when he sees other people catch fire for the same initiative and take ownership of it themselves, especially his key leaders, that's when he knows it's something God is doing beyond his control or influence. God is in the work and inspiring others to get on board. Haggai would agree, we have a winner. The end of chapter 1 tells us of a sure sign that this was a work God was indwelling and empowering. "And the Lord stirred up the spirit of Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, governor of Judah, and the spirit of Joshua, the son of Jehozadak, the high priest, and the spirit of all the remnant of the people. And they came and worked on the house of the Lord of hosts, their God." Haggai 1:14. Like my discipleship minister said, the Spirit of God was stirring these people to accomplish the work. It started with the leadership responding to the call of God, and then the Spirit of God stirring within everyone from the top down. This isn't groupthink or the power of persuasion. This is God stirring the hearts of His people to do the work He has called them to do. That's how you know. The people have to respond to be open to His work in their lives, certainly. But the work is the Lord's. Discouragement withers in the fresh air of God's presence in the work He has set before us. No fear. So, get up and get to work. What has He called you to do for the sake of the gospel today? Who is He laying on your heart to talk with? How is He calling you to adjust your life to a greater work for Him? What are you letting speak fear and discouragement into your life that is stopping you from the good work of God? No wrong answers, discussion questions. Number 1. God stirs in the hearts of His people to do the work He has called them to do. How are you seeing God move in your church fellowship to work in missions, representing Christ in the community, or maybe in strengthening the families in your local church? What is God stirring you to take on for the sake of the gospel? Joshua says hello. Haggai's story had a happy ending, but it wasn't happy yet. When the people began the work again on the temple, those who had opposed them in the past stepped up their discouragement game. This time, the leadership and the people leaned on the Lord and on the good work God had done in the heart of King Cyrus the Persian on their behalf in years prior. God had given them favor with an earlier king. They didn't let the discouragement beat them. Ezra 5 and 6 recorded this back and forth episode, and it went straight to the top. The adversaries wanted names. They wanted heads to roll. They wanted the work stopped. One very fortunate thing was that a decree from an earlier king in Persia could not be revoked by a later king. The Jews knew this, so they politely asked their opposition to check back with the king and do a quick record search of the royal archives. In the meantime, they wouldn't stop working on God's house. Things were coming together, and God's house was shaping up. Although it was much smaller and less grand than Solomon's temple before. Some of the old-timers who remembered the temple before actually wept on seeing the new and smaller one coming together. They had a real sense of what was lost. God spoke through Haggai again and brought along some of what he said to encourage the Jewish leader Joshua almost 1,000 years before. Speak now and say, who is left among you who saw this house in its former glory? How do you see it now? Is it not as nothing in your eyes? Yet now, be strong, O Zerubbabel, declares the Lord. Be strong, O Joshua, son of Jehozadak, the high priest. Be strong, all you people of the land, declares the Lord. Work, for I am with you. My spirit remains in your midst. Fear not. Haggai 2:3-5. Long before the high priest Joshua we see in the book of Haggai, there was another Joshua who led God's people to claim the land promised to them by God. It took real work and sacrifice to do it. They were going to need two things very badly: strength and courage. The first chapter of the book of Joshua is a famous one. In it, God said repeatedly to the man tapped to lead God's people on this great mission to claim the promised land, I will not leave you or forsake you. Be strong and courageous. Only be strong and very courageous. Be strong and courageous. Do not be frightened and do not be dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. Joshua 1:5, 6, 7, and 9. In fact, this message is one that God gives a good bit. See Isaiah 41. Being a Christian, no matter the time or place, requires a good bit of strength and courage. There are adversaries to the good work of God everywhere. Sometimes we can be our own worst adversaries. What God asked Joshua to do in his name was a mighty task. Weakness and discouragement are not hard to find in times of great pitch and moment. What God asked of his people in Haggai's day required no less strength and courage than in Joshua's day. These words would have rung clear and true in the ears of these faithful Hebrews. They would have been inspired by them as they recalled Joshua's mighty victories in claiming the promised land. The book of 1 John tells you and me something too. Quote, do not be surprised, brothers, that the world hates you. 1 John 4:13. It is up to us to love the world around us with the love of Christ, even when the world hates us for doing so. That requires guts. That requires strength. That requires courage. God supplies these things in sufficient measure to those who diligently seek Him and prioritize His good work in the world. He gave them to Joshua. He gave them to Haggai. And He will give them to you. Strength and courage in doing the work He has called you to do. Fear not. The promise of Christ is true. He is with us always. Matthew 28:20. So, get out there and get to work. That's what Coach Haggai is saying to you and to me. No wrong answers discussion questions. Number one, what God's people then and now need is strength and courage to go against the flow and shine the light of Christ into the darkness. Whether it is taking the promised land, rebuilding the temple, or sharing Christ with someone you know, adversity and discouragement will always be there from our enemy and from those who oppose God's peace. Be strong, God says. In what ways have you found you dearly needed God's strength and help in a difficult situation or in a difficult conversation? How have you been encouraged to be strong in the Lord? Don't get too big for your britches. The remainder of Haggai is a message reminding God's people at that time that God was the one making things happen according to His will and design. Yes, they were participating and doing the labor, but it was God who would bless the work and their lives afterward. God reminded the people about how things were before Coach Haggai showed up and blew his whistle. Now God and his people were working together with renewed effort. There was no stopping them. But sometimes, when we get involved in a successful initiative as Christians and church leaders, we can be tempted to forget what things were like when we were struggling in selfishness before God showed up to bless His work. And we can even take the credit, pointing to a good decision here, strong leadership there, and saying just the right thing at a key point. Pats on the back all round. But God is reminding them here that the kingdom work is His. He had in mind something more than just rebuilding the temple, as we considered earlier. To stamp our names on something of God, or to seek praise in God's ongoing work, is to claim something that is not ours to claim. He will bless. He will see the work done. He will be faithful to complete it. So don't get too big for your britches. That's easy to do. Who doesn't like people telling them how great they are and how wonderful something that they did was to them? Yeah, well, that's where we can get off track quickly and lose a godly perspective that looks beyond our own time. Haggai closed with some strange imagery that's hard to grasp on first reading, but as God had communicated about the purpose of His house being rebuilt, these verses are about something only God could do in the future, far beyond Haggai's day. It becomes clear here that the people were a part of something God was doing, and not the other way around. We should remember that as well. Speak to Zerubbabel, governor of Judah, saying, I am about to shake the heavens and the earth, and to overthrow the thrones of kingdoms. I am about to destroy the kingdoms of the nations, and the horses and their riders shall go down, every one by the sword of his brother. Haggai 2:21-22. Scholars go back and forth as to what these words may be referring, but the language seems to indicate something in the not-too-distant future, far from Haggai's time. Whatever the Day of the Lord language refers to here, it's clearly drawing symbolism from earlier Psalms and history about God's defeating Pharaoh's army at the Red Sea in Moses' day and of the destruction of Sodom far earlier. As God acted in human history, He would do so again. God doesn't just look at the present as we humans do. He sees the whole picture and sees how what happens today fits into what will happen far into the future. We can take comfort in that. The last few sentences of Haggai underscore that God is the one driving history. Of Zerubbabel, he says something very interesting. On that day, declares the Lord of hosts, I will take you, O Zerubbabel, my servant, the son of Shealtiel, declares the Lord, and make you like a signet ring, for I have chosen you, declares the Lord of hosts. Haggai 2:23. Something important to note is that Zerubbabel is in the line of Davidic kings, though not a king here. God made a promise to King David long before that Israel would never lack a descendant of his on the throne in the generations after him. That became something looked for in the coming Messiah, or promised one, that would bring about all the promises of God for his people. The language Haggai used here is reminiscent of God's words to King David. Like we said, God remembers his promises and keeps them, no matter what. The last image attributed to Zerubbabel is of a signet ring. That was a kind of ring used to prove that a letter or document had the authority of the king in it. It came from his own hand and was sealed with the stamp of his signet ring. These words likely looked forward to the awaited Messiah who would come bearing the authority of a king, who would himself be called King of Kings, Jesus Christ our Savior, in language that was veiled but still carried the weight of promise. God looked to a bright future in Haggai's last words, to the day when salvation would come for all people and peace would be proclaimed to those who were far off and to those who were near, Ephesians 4:17, through Jesus. This reference to a signet ring is also a reassurance to God's people that he had not abandoned them and was still pursuing reconciliation and redemption with them even after all the wickedness that had come before through a horrible king of Judah, Jeconiah, or Jehoiachin, Jeremiah 22:24-30. Whereas this awful king was like a signet ring thrown off, Zerubbabel was seen a true and righteous leader for God's people at that time. God's merciful work towards reconciliation and forgiveness here is truly astounding. Haggai packs quite a punch. He gives us encouragement for the work today and a reminder that we are working together under the guidance of God himself for a glorious future that is in his hands. So, get up and get to work. No wrong answers, discussion questions. Number one, it can be easy to make it all about us. But God made it clear in Haggai that the work was his and part of a greater work he would do in the future when Jesus the Messiah would come. Having an eternal perspective is key to see what God is doing in and through us now as part of the work he is doing that reaches far beyond our days. What are some ways that are helpful for you to not make it all about you and to rise above a challenging situation to let God work through you in that situation? Number two, do you think about how what you do now will affect future generations? How, as a follower of Jesus, does that affect your choices and actions?